This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford, and on the show this week, Kim Severson will be here to talk about her European summer, which she capped off by winning the Blenheim Horse Trials with Cooley Cross Border, some 16 years after her first win with Winsome Adante. But we start this week with an update on the new USEF rules on bits, and joining me now is Janice Linnan, who is the Steward General for Eventing for US Equestrian. Janice, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Where would you like to begin with this?
I believe the best way to start is to say that we've needed a clarification of what exactly is allowed and what we are trying to accomplish by bringing these new bits that have been allowed, you know, into play for the benefit of the horse and the rider, of course. So that's what we're trying to accomplish by clarifying the new rules, as they say.
And these new rules are national rules or international rules? Let's start there, Janice.
Well, basically both, because the USEF's goal has been to bring our eventing bidding rules into compliance with the FEI. And the first thing that we're trying to do is to determine which ones are in compliance. And then if there are some in the national book that perhaps aren't approved by the FEI for whatever reason, we'll have to address each of those individually. So that's the national piece. The FEI piece is that we have been in conversations with the dressage committee since about March, maybe April, and trying to get a clarification on a number of bits that are allowed in the FEI dressage, because we follow the FEI dressage rules. And those have now been clarified, I think, as of the 1st of July. And there's charts with photos and pictures, and it's made it a lot more clear to the competitor as well as the officials who are trying to do their job correctly on what now is allowed in eventing for the FEI. Does that help?
Yes. Yeah, so when would these rules become effective then, Janice? So you say they were decided in July. What's the timeline for this?
For the FEI, it was immediate. It was effective immediately, July 1st, that the rules, I need to back up, I apologize. They approved them on July 1st, and I believe it was August 1st they became effective. And so the FEI, it's on their website, and you can go there and look under useful documents under the FEI dressage. And it's very clear now which bits are allowed in eventing for the FEI. And as far as the rules, et cetera, for USEF, that will have to still be approved. And then that would be published for, we're hoping, January. Possibly taking effect April 1st, but that hasn't been solidified yet, so I really can't say exactly when the new rules will take effect because it still has to be voted on and approved.
Just explain that for us, for our listeners, Janice, would you? When you say it has to be voted on and approved, where does it go now for that ratification?
From my understanding is that we will be taking a last look at it in December, and then the USEF publishes their new rule book in January, to my knowledge.
Now, in terms of which discipline now, we're talking about, or which phase rather, the dressage, or are we talking about every phase of eventing, Janice?
Well, as far as bits are concerned, you are pretty free to use any type of bidding or even using a bitless bridle, for instance, you know, a hackamore, because in jumping and cross country, you're pretty free to use whatever you choose. The ones that are restricted are basically in the dressage phase. Those are the ones that we're talking about.
Okay, so when you say the ones that are restricted, does this mean that there's going to be a new chart, or there are some of them off the chart now as a result of this new rule?
there's a new chart, and a number of them have been added for clarification that they will be allowed. So there'll be a new chart. It will be called Appendix 1. It'll be in the rule book, we're hoping. And that way, if a competitor wants to look up a bit, there'll be a chart which will say it's allowed for USCF eventing, it's allowed for FEI eventing, and this hopefully will be included in our rule book that comes out for 2018.
Okay, so they can go to the FEI website already, can they, and see this chart?
For the FEI, yes, that's correct.
What else would they need to know then, Janice, at this point then? Because obviously it's going to affect a lot of people. They need to know that they're in compliance with the rules nationally and internationally. What else would you like to share with them?
I would think it's very important, after looking at what has now been added, that they are allowed to use. And they still have to go back to the fact what their horse is happiest in and what is best for their horse. And most people do know what type of bit, I have to believe, that their horse is happiest in and works well in. So even though we've included, and there will be numerous other bits included, I would caution them not to change, because sometimes change isn't better, if that makes sense to, I think it makes sense to most riders.
And certainly not last minute changes.
Oh, absolutely not. And Chris, that's one of the things that makes me hopeful with our new chart that's coming out, because there's nothing worse than a person getting on the property and having the steward or the TD say, oh gosh, you can't compete in this bit, and now they have to change the bit and go in the ring in an hour. That's not fair to them, it's not fair to the horse. So we're hoping to make it a better level, fair playing field.
And so for more information right now, they can go to the FEI website, as you said, and see the chart that applies to international rules. And then national rules will become effective in the rule book in January. So they'll be able to find a chart, presumably online, Janice, that will be as well, will it?
Yes, it will be online. And it's going to be the Appendix 1. Usually they print the rule book, I believe, in January, but it should be up online by December 1st. If everything goes as planned, and if it goes through all the committees, as we are hoping that it will.
Okay. Is there anything else you would like to add, Janice, before we let you go?
No, I think you've pretty well covered it. It's just kind of exciting to know that there's more information out there available to all the riders so they can have a really good go in the dressage court.
Well, thank you very much indeed for coming on the program and sharing that update with us, Janice. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you so much for having me.
Kim Stevenson spent much of the summer in Ireland and England preparing for the Sanson Blenheim horse trials. It was the first time that Kim has ridden over David Evans's track since he took over as course designer from Mike Etherington Smith. Her first trip there was back in the 90s, and in 2001 she actually won the trophy with Winsome Adante. Her win with Cooley Cross Border was to underscore her belief in this horse and his potential. Kim, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, congratulations, first of all. That must have felt rather nice after all these years going back and winning Blenheim again.
It did. It was really, really good. It was the first time I've been back to Blenheim in many, many years, and certainly worked out well for me, so I enjoyed it.
Well, let's just remind everybody, it was 2001, so 16 years ago when you were there with Dan, Winsome Adante, of course, winning it that time. How well did you know Blenheim that first time round then, Kim? Because you say, I'm sure this changes since you were there before, but to talk a little bit about the comparisons between the tracks there, what you were expecting back then with Dan, and what you found when you were there again this year.
Well, I had actually been in 99 with my Over the Limit horse. So it had only been, you know, a couple years. The course was very similar back then, done by Mike Yes. The course was great. New course designer to the 3-star level. I thought he did a great job. The tracks, funnily enough, were very, very similar. A lot of the, you know, similar in a lot of ways and, you know, of course, different in some ways. But I thought it was what I was expecting it to be, and I thought it was great.
So obviously this is a fabulous venue, and you spent a little bit of time in Europe before you went there. But I want to just backtrack to the season, how this all began for you, because, you know, you finished out this last season with this horse, seventh at Fairhill, of course, having won Morven Park. And you came out with a win at the Carolinas this season, and then you added a couple of R's to his CV and then brought him back to form. So tell us the story. What happened?
I took him to Kentucky. I wasn't really sure he was really fit enough to go to Rolex, and I was sort of in between trying to figure out what to do, and I really wanted a grant to go to Europe, and I didn't get one for the spring, and so I chose taking to Kentucky, and 9 minutes in, he was tired, he was exhausted, and so I pulled him up, and Buck Davidson suggested that we go and do Tattersalls, in Ireland, and I thought that would be a good idea, and we would just zip around, and everything would be great, and he'd have no trouble. And as it turned out, he was quite overwhelmed from Kentucky. Everything he did at Kentucky was brilliant, was very, very good, but he was way over jumping stuff and that kind of thing. So he sort of, when I went out at Tattersalls, I think he thought that was going to be a really huge track. Not the same horse I had at Kentucky. So I retired there and, had the opportunity to leave him at Cooley Farm with Richard Chain, where I bought him, and leave him there for the summer. And I went back and forth to Ireland a total of 6 times this summer just to compete him. And Katie O'Sullivan, who rides for Richard, is the one who actually did all this fitness work. And I think she did 1 jump school on him while I was gone. He didn't do any dressage except for when I was there, which was probably very good for him because he was getting fitter without having me sort of pestering him about it. So clearly I think it worked out. But thanks to Richard, I did, I think it was five shows over there to prepare for him. And he got to go to Mill Street. The CIC at Mill Street was the last thing he did before Blenheim. And that was a huge track and a good competition. So I felt after that we were going to at least be fit enough and be able to answer the questions when we got to Blenheim.
So what did you take away then from, obviously from Rolex and then from Tattersalls, that informed how he would spend the summer and which event you would bring him back out at for the fall, Kim?
I think, being able to leave him in Ireland for the summer was a great opportunity because I was able to compete him all summer. The ground is obviously a lot better than we're going to get here in the States. So I was able to compete him quite a bit. And of course I didn't have a ton of choices where to take him. He did an intermediate, a 2-star, an advanced, and 2 3-stars before Blenheim. So that was kind of, that's what he was there to do. And that's what we did. And so I think that, just having the opportunity to compete him more over the summer and build on his fitness, a springboard of him being fit enough to do a 3-star, but not quite fit enough to do a 4-star. We're fortunate to be able to have that in order to build on his fitness going forward.
Now, what about his confidence level? Obviously, coming out of Blenheim, he probably feels like a very different horse now. But going into Blenheim, did you feel you had a different horse, apart from his fitness and, his little sabbatical from dressage as well with you through the summer? Coming into Blenheim, though, what kind of horse did you feel you had under you and there to answer the questions that you saw on that track, knowing Blenheim as you do and obviously feeling that this was the track for him?
I felt like, Cross is the same horse no matter what. Like, he does get excitable in the dressage. He doesn't get worse with fitness. He's pretty much the same horse. So truthfully, you don't really know until you get out on cross country how he's actually feeling. But having competed him so much over the summer and him learning to go faster and faster cross country and sort of knowing where his fitness was, I knew that he absolutely was going to be fine and well with themselves to be able to do this, and this should be easy for him, being that we just built off the 9 minutes we had at Kentucky. And in fact, that turned out to be true. We were, in the victory gallop, he did a little bucking in the victory gallop, which is for him pretty unusual, having said that he's pretty much the same all the time. So when he did that, I knew he was absolutely good to go. And of course he showed jumped beautifully. So that was very beneficial. Very, it's nice to have him that good.
Oh, for sure. A great feeling. But talk us through that track, though, with him. You know, given the experiences you've had with him, and you wanted him, obviously, to be confident and in front of you and come away with a good experience, how did that track actually ride? Take us around it.
I think the track was really good. You know, being a new horse designer, I think he did a really good job of introducing things as we went around. You know, most course designers, when they do something for the first time, don't beef it up too much. And I would say that was the case. It wasn't a terribly, incredibly hard track, but I think it had some super duper questions, really, really good questions. But he did introduce you to stuff as you went around. Sort of, you jumped the smaller triple brush in that water where there was so much trouble before you jumped the really big triple brush that was out of the coffin. And, you know, sort of questions like that. For me, I thought Cross answered every single question amazingly and very, very well. I don't think it would have mattered if he had, you know, jumped the biggest triple brush in the water the first time or, you know, that kind of stuff. I thought that he was very confident in where he was, well within his abilities, not jumping quite so high over all the tables and the maximum jumps, sort of what sucked up a lot of our energy at Kentucky. So I thought that he was really, really good. And very happy to do his job. I mean, it did feel easy for him, and it should have. So I was very happy with that.
So compare, if you would, Kim, the attitude you had to this horse and the partnership that you had, say, a year ago, and your plans for this spring and how it rolled out, compared to what you feel now, having won Blenheim, and you've got the year in front of you to plan. Just compare those differences for us and what 2018 might look like for this partnership.
Well, I think I know the horse a whole lot better. I think one of the things that really came out of this summer for me personally was sort of not having any preconceived notions about the courses I was going to be doing, because I didn't know any of them. I'd never been to Mill Street or to Kilgaikie or any of those places in Ireland. So pretty much I showed up, I did one schooling day on my horse, whether it was kind of a dressage or a jump day, and then you go to the event and you compete. You jump what's in front of you. And I think for me to get out of my comfort zone, so to speak, and just jump what's there was tremendously beneficial. I think that because I got to do so much with this year, more horse trials than I've ever done on him, and being able to just keep going right on through the summer and do it and put that all together in a 9-month package rather than sort of 4 months and 4 months with a break in between, that kind of thing, I think will really help us in the long term in terms of springboarding from where we are now and being able to carry on what we have achieved and being able to, you know, be better and better for next year as we move forward.
Have you started to map out the spring season?
A little bit. I mean, I know I'd like to take him to Wellington again. He was very good there. That was actually really, really good for him cross-country wise, interestingly enough. And then, you know, sort of breaking down from there, I don't really know what's going to happen. I think, you know, obviously Kentucky's going to be on the books. And we'll just sort of have to see how he comes out next year and make sure we're on the same program. And I believe that we will be, and hopefully we'll be able to just keep moving forward.
Well, this is clearly the horse that you've earmarked as a four-star horse for your future and hopefully to get back on the team, Kim. How does he compare to horses you've had in the past in terms, every horse is very different, of course, but does this feel like a star in the making, or was Blenheim the event that really underscored it for you, your belief in him?
I think I've always loved the horse, and I've always known he was going to be a good horse. I haven't always thought that I rode the horse very well. I've been very open about saying that I don't particularly feel like I ride the horse well. However, after this summer, I did ride him well every time and we were going well. And I feel like that is hopefully going to help us quite a bit in the future in terms of me just giving him good, consistent rides. You know, I think he's obviously very strong in the show jumping, which for me is hugely beneficial after my experiences with my gray horse. And I think now that we're on the same program, hopefully I can show him the way on cross country. I think he was definitely doing that at Kentucky. He was just going brilliantly until he was tired. So, you know, I believe that, you know, I've always believed this is a fabulous horse. There's no two ways about it. You know, whether or not I can make him the horse that I want him to be, you know, well, we've been waiting to see, but I think we're on the right track.
I want to go back to Ireland for a little bit, Kim, because as you said, it's an unusual experience and opportunity for you to be able to spend that time to keep going back and collecting the air miles, of course, in the process and enjoying some of the Irish way of life and their eventing season. Talk a little bit about that for our listeners who maybe are not familiar with it, because it is very different to over here, isn't it?
It is definitely different. It's quite a bit more relaxed. There's, you know, people are just sort of easygoing. One of the really big differences for me was I went up to show jump and there were two separate jumps. So two full sets of show jumps within the same arena. So two fully different 1-star and 2-star courses. So it sort of took me a minute to figure out what was going on. And you show up on whatever horse, your 1-star or your 2-star horse, and you jump that course. So that was kind of interesting. But back, everything's most often done in a one day or pretty close to it. And it's, you know, it's just a nice atmosphere. The ground, of course, is huge, and it was wonderful to do that. The courses were certainly substantial. The ones that, you know, that we got to do, I think they were super questions, very well run events, and, you know, very fortunate that I was able to have the opportunity to do that, and to Cooley Farm for making sure I got to all those horse shows. I think that was pretty major.
Are there any things over there that you wish we did here, or vice versa?
Well, I really wish we could get that ground over here. I mean, there's nothing in particular that, you know, you kind of say, you know, they are, like I said, they're more likely to run a one day. I wish there were other shows here, more and more doing it for sure. But I would love to be able to, you know, have that be happening more and more often moving forward, which I realize in some of that parts of the country, it doesn't really work. But I think here on the East Coast, it does. And it just was, you know, such a nice laid back atmosphere. I really appreciated it.
The Irish lifestyle, there's nothing like it. And there's not much wrong with their drink and their food either, Kim. So you must have had a whale of a time over there, I'd imagine.
I had a good time. Unfortunately, I don't partake in the drink anymore, so that's good. But I did really enjoy the food and whatnot. It was really good.
Wonderful. Okay, well, before I let you go, talk about what else Kim Stevenson is doing this season and over the winter. What can we expect? What other horses? Where are you going?
Well, Kim Severson's spending a lot of time trying to get my trailer. My trailer got totaled sort of in the summertime, so I have been trying to get that
Ouch.
All put back together. Exactly. It's not very much fun. So I have actually not a lot of horses right now. I have very few horses right now, which it turns out is a great time to have a few horses because I don't have a horse trailer. So hopefully I'll be getting that taken care of, and then I actually do have a trip to go back over to Cooley Farm to hopefully get another young horse. So, you know, I've got a small string of very nice horses. I'm happy with that. And, you know, just keep moving forward as you do.
I was going to ask about the horse shopping. There must have been some horse shopping involved whilst you were there. And you're going back for more.
I actually didn't do any horse shopping, but it was really fun going back about every 10 days and seeing what horses he still had or what horses had sold and who bought the horses that I'd seen and which ones I liked and who ended up with the ones that I liked or the ones that I wasn't so sure about who has those. So it was really fun. I know Kyle Carter just got a new one. I was familiar with that horse. I know, you know, several people from the U.S. that got horses from him while I was there. So that was really interesting to see all that. So I enjoyed that a lot.
Well, let me ask you then, because I know our listeners are going to be wondering what Kim Severson looks for in a horse when she goes shopping in Ireland. What give us top two, maybe three tips, Kim. What do you look for?
Honestly, gut feeling. Gut feeling is your number one. For me, that's your number one. And pretty much if I get on and get along with it and like it, I think that means a lot. I've bought horses before that are super nice but maybe weren't a horse that I got along with particularly well, and other horses that were maybe not what Richard thought was the top horse, but I really enjoyed riding it. And those, you know, turn out to be the best ones to ride, the ones you really enjoy riding, whether it's the fanciest or not. So I think that's pretty important, gut feeling.
So love at first sight is number one.
I think it's got to be pretty up there. I mean, especially when you're going to Cooley Farm and every single horse they bring out is going to be a nice horse. Like,
right.
Okay, you can't really go wrong after that. Like, then it's your personal preference. But, you know, I think that's important, not getting into what other people think, but what you truly believe you enjoy riding or which horse you just like to ride of the ones you sit on. I think that's important.
Right. Follow your instincts. Good advice, Kim. Yeah. Well, congratulations again on that win with Cooler. We're going to see a lot more of this horse, this partnership, and we want to wish you the very best of luck for the season to come with him. And thanks for taking the time to come on the program, Kim. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And before we close this week, a reminder that registration is open now for the 2017 Annual Meeting and Convention, which takes place at the Westin Lodge Beach Hotel from December the 6th through the 10th. You'll find a link to the convention pages on the website. Just go to useventing.com and in the right-hand column, you'll see the logo to the convention where you can go and register. And if you're a new listener to this program and you would prefer to listen to it on the go, you can download it from the iTunes podcast store to any podcast app. And if you follow us on social media, you'll find updates when the latest episode is available. So until the next time, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world and enjoy your eventing.